Did you read your local newspaper this morning? Probably not, because thousands of American newspapers have shut down in the last couple of decades, disrupted by evolving technology and changing news habits. This has left many of us without reliable sources of local information, which makes participating in civic life increasingly difficult. This problem and potential solutions are examined in the new book, Death of the Daily News: How Citizen Gatekeepers Can Save Local Journalism, by Andrew Conti. Andrew is the founder of the Center for Media Innovation at Point Park University and a former award-winning investigative journalist for the Pittsburgh Tribune Review. Here he is to share some of his big ideas.
Hello, I'm Andy Conti, author of Death of the Daily News, and I'm pleased to share with you five big takeaways from my book. In my day job, I run the Center for Media Innovation at Point Park University in downtown Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I worked many years as an investigative journalist in Pittsburgh. Now, my research focuses on how to sustain and regrow local news. The book takes place in McKeesport, Pennsylvania, a small town just up the Monongahela River, here in the southwestern corner of the state. McKeesport sits in what was the industrial heart of what we call the Mon River Valley. When people talk about Pittsburgh being a steel town, they're thinking of places like McKeesport, which produced so much steel pipe in the 19th and 20th centuries that it gained the moniker Tube City. But when the industry collapsed in the 1970s and 80s, it took communities like this with it. McKeesport once had more than 50,000 residents, multiple department stores, and the headquarters of the G.C. Murphy's Dime Store Company. Now, it has fewer than 20,000 people, and many of its storefronts are boarded up or empty and caked with dust. One of the latest blows came when the Daily News newspaper went out of business at the end of 2015, after 131 years of publishing. Here are my five big takeaways. Number one, disruption causes unbelievable heartache, but it also creates unimaginable opportunities. It hurts to see friends lose their jobs, to see beloved institutions fading away, and to see our communities mired in misinformation and deliberate disinformation. At the same time, we're living amid the most exciting communications revolution since Gutenberg and his printing press. Since losing its newspaper, McKeesport has seen an explosion of activity by citizen gatekeepers who are choosing on their own what information to share with their family and friends and others around them. First, people start asking questions like, what do you know or what have you heard? Then they turn to social media. More than 65 Facebook pages exist throughout the Mon Valley, including a half dozen focused on news and one that's actually called the Daily News. In addition, an online news outlet run by a former journalist with local residents continues to grow more robust, and four businessmen in a nearby community started their own printed newspaper and hired a reporter in McKeesport. My Center of Media Innovation has started a community newsroom in the Mon Valley, too. It's run by Martha Ryle, a Pulitzer Prize-winning photographer. We've been working with young people in middle school, up through those in their 70s and 80s. One young woman who joined us in eighth grade graduated from high school last year, and now studies journalism at Howard University. If we don't help anyone else, it will have been worth it, but we're only getting started. The idea of news deserts is a misnomer because news keeps happening. People just have to figure out how to understand it. We're seeing a new pattern play out from small towns to big cities. When the large traditional news outlets shrink their coverage areas, lay off reporters, or simply close, citizens start doing the work of sifting through all the available information and making sense of it. They rarely consider themselves to be journalists, but the people on their own are providing valuable resources to the places where they live. When they do this, they bring new perspectives to local storytelling too. In the past, a few wealthy people tended to control the narrative of local news because they could afford a printing press or a broadcast license. Now, thanks to technology, all sorts of people have this ability, and they're using it. We have tended to look at news deserts from a deficit narrative, but by flipping the script, we can start to value the many positives that exist, too. Number two, people value local news more than they think. When the Daily News closed, some local politicians even rejoiced. They thought no one would be asking them difficult questions any longer. What they quickly realized was that no one would be telling the positive stories about them either. Newspapers create what community engagement experts call, quote, social capital, or the value that builds up when neighbors interact and learn about each other. Newspapers tell our stories from birth to death and everything in between. Many people I interviewed could remember the first time their name or their photo appeared in the Daily News. People had been taking the same newspaper as their parents and grandparents and even their great-grandparents. Suddenly that went away, and many residents quickly felt lost. In its wake, many people have started trying on their own to fill in the gaps, with mixed success. They share reliable information, but it gets mixed with rumors, made-up stories, and personal opinions. In the book, I tell the story of how one person shared on Facebook that a police officer had been shot. Another person wrote in to say they, quote, confirmed the story by driving past the hospital and seeing a bunch of police cars. Any journalist knows that that kind of anecdote does not mean anything without actual verification. But to the social media users, it seemed to mean everything. When an actual police officer tried to correct the story, to say no one had been shot, people refused to believe the truth. We need to value reliable local news in the places where we still have it. Number three, tweets matter. Or rather, social media matters, or all the ways that we share information matter. We often act like we can say anything on the internet because it just floats away somewhere. But in reality, these exchanges, the information we share, make up our community conversations. This defines what we know about the places where we live. I refer in my book to, quote, citizen gatekeepers. This harkens back to a media study from the 1950s in which a Boston University social scientist looked at a mid-sized newspaper in a Midwestern town. A single-night wire copy editor there made decisions about what information would go into the newspaper from all of the available resources. This particular person did not care for Catholics, and so he kept out stories about the Vatican. He favored conservative perspectives in every case, and he avoided certain stories such as salacious murders and suicides. In a pre-internet age, one person like this could serve as a gatekeeper to information for their community. This underscores the importance of publications such as the Chicago Defender and the Pittsburgh Courier, which actually had bureaus and distribution via rail car across the entire country. If you were a Black person for much of the 20th century, you had to rely on local white journalists to tell you about the civil rights movement and about African American culture, unless you could get a copy of one of these newspapers. Today, we all serve as gatekeepers to the information for the people around us. Without thinking, we make decisions all the time about what to tell our neighbors and what to share on social media. I'm calling on all of us now to take these moments more seriously. Number four, we must do better. Once we acknowledge that information matters, we all must do a better job of protecting it. I talk about the Peter Parker principle from Spider-Man. With great power comes great responsibility. We've all been given the power to publish and broadcast from our cell phones and our laptop computers, and we need to take that responsibility seriously. In the book, I talk about Dye's Cornerstone Cafe, a place in McKeesport where a lot of residents turn for information because so many people eat there. Police officers, politicians, firefighters. Diane Elias, who owns the shop, ran for school board and got elected basically on the strength of her restaurant. On a typical day, someone will come in or call with a question about something they've heard. Then Dye and the waitresses will get to work, acting like detectives, piecing together the story by calling people they know and chatting with the diners. But it does not always go so well. Dye told the story about how people around town were saying that a local businessman named Ray had died, and it seemed true, until one day when he walked into the cafe. He was alive! He was a good sport about the rumor, but it underscored the need to confirm local news. Now, Dye said she shares only information that she can confirm with primary sources. Each of us needs to start a little revolution by sharing only information that we have confirmed and know to be true. Number five, journalists still have an important role to play. If you ask most newsroom editors and producers to work with the public, they'll roll their eyes and say it takes too much time, that the information the public provides is too unreliable, or that the newsrooms simply do not have the resources. But the reality is that journalists can expand their reach and their bottom line profits by working with the people who have always been the audience. Journalists have used the Society of Professional Journalists Code of Ethics as a way to separate professionals from the public. This has worked so well that even when amateurs do the work of journalism, they refuse to think of it that way. Now, journalists need to make a shift. We can use guidelines such as the Code of Ethics as guardrails for the public to help them do a better job of collecting and disseminating information. All of this makes business sense by leveraging newsroom resources to cover more communities and provide more perspectives, ultimately bringing more people back to trusting and paying for local news. We're all in this together now. People often ask me what they can do to support local news. You can start out by supporting the journalists who are still doing the work of telling stories. A 500,000 Pittsburghers who were paying for local news just 5 years ago, typically through a newspaper subscription, no longer are. If you have a newspaper in your community, subscribe to it. If an online news outlet provides information for free, click on the stories, share them on social media, and take a moment to acknowledge the local businesses that advertise on those sites. We also have a responsibility for information on our own, too. Before you share something, think about whether you know it to be true. If it's just a rumor, don't tell anyone else, at least until you can check it out. If it's your opinion, just let people know that that's how you feel and that it's not necessarily the truth. Local news has changed so much over the past 15 years that we're still trying to understand what it all means. In the past, professional journalists asked hard questions, showed up at community events, and told the stories of the places where we live, for better and for worse. Now, we all share this responsibility. We can and do contribute to local knowledge, whether we realize it or not. Death of the Daily News has the image of a skull on its cover, and it starts out with a despairing motif. But the narrative ultimately tells a hopeful story. Yes, all the disruption journalism has experienced over the past 15 years plus has caused a lot of pain. But it also is creating opportunity. It's up to all of us to harness the energy of this moment to sustain and restore local news. Thank you for listening, and I hope you enjoy the book.
Thank you, Andy. That was 5 key insights from Death of the Daily News, How Citizen Gatekeepers Can Save Local Journalism by Andrew Conti. For more ideas about journalism, check out our book bite for The Paradox of Democracy, Free Speech, Open Media, and Perilous Persuasion by Zach Gershberg and Sean Illing. I'm Rufus Griscom. Thanks for listening.